That's put it on your resume when you're done. I told Ross the same thing.
Oh, really?
Okay.
Well, yeah, you're
sure. How would I put that down? Just like interview with
assistant with sports medicine broadcast at the sports medicine.
All right, welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast. We are sitting here with the Chris Juno. Chris, pleasure to meet you.
Yeah.
Can you give us a rundown about what you talked about today?
Yeah, so the topic that that Bob and I discussed was doing some discussion about overuse strategy or prevention of overuse injuries in endurance athletes. And so there was a bit of a shift in where I wanted to go with it. There's the obvious selection of going on tissue, kind of tissue specific type stuff, and that would be things like overuse injuries related to Achilles tendon pain, or you know, hitting too many golf balls and end up with medial elbow pain, plantar fasciitis, stuff like that. And that's I think has a bit more of a direct approach to it, as opposed to understanding why these things happen. So what I chose to do was go a little different route about load management and about education, because I don't think we do a very good job of educating athletes and parents and really society in general about why things break down and why adding more to them is not the right way to go about managing these conditions. And so ultimately what I wanted to discuss was variables like load management and objectively measuring what happens when you put a stimulus into somebody. And that could be running a mile or you know, swimming a couple hundred laps to you know, riding half a mile on a bike. All those things add something to somebody's tissue competence. And if their tissue isn't willing to accept that, then you get hurt, and nobody likes that.
So as a trainer, as a physical therapist, what population should we be keeping an eye on for these issues?
Well, I think there's two primary populations, one being the younger athlete that really is relying on somebody else to do their programming for them, right? And that would be, you know, your high school or junior high age, maybe club sport athletes, sixth grade, seventh grade, where the volume is really getting high. They're playing tons of tournaments, you know, and they're day-to-day operations is being accounted for by somebody else, whether it's mom or coach. They're not in control of their own days.
Mom and coach.
And right? Coach, right.
So you all have coaches at home and
oh, sure.
Coaches at school.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. So they're all accounting for that. Yeah. The other are the uncontrolled athletes that are maybe, like, you know what, couch to 5K athletes. Those are that's dangerous, right, sure. Because they don't understand the loading paradigm that's in place, and they're thinking, well, I want to get fit. I want to get in shape. I want to sweat. I want to get out there and burn it up. You know what? Well, if I run a mile today, then by God, I want to run a mile and a half in 3 days, and I want to really burn this thing up because I want to lose weight, yep. Right? Beach season's around the corner. My race is coming up, and so they're inadequate and ill-equipped to program for themselves because they're uneducated, and it's just because we don't do a very good job, I think, in healthcare about empowering these individuals. So I think those are probably your two bigger populations.
I have a question about tools such as a lot of times, and I experienced this when I was an athlete in college, yeah. Is you get an injury, and let's say it's chronic overuse injury. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times that I noticed with me and other people that, you know, upon graduating, I never really got the tools that I needed after graduating in order to, you know, not let that injury persist.
Right.
So when we're in the setting at the time and we're with our athletic trainer, it's fine. But once we leave, what are some tools that we can take away from that experience so it doesn't occur, you know, after athletics, right. And we can still be active?
Right. So you mean from an athlete side?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't know if I need to – I don't want to give an example, but let's say it's – you have an IT band syndrome, uh-huh. And what are some tools that an athlete could take away from that setting, right. That they can use when they leave? Like, what are some suggestions that you would have?
Yeah, so one of them would be education, and that's a lot of what my presentation was about. So yeah. I use the cup method a lot, right?
Right.
And
yeah,
that's
the cup analogy.
The cup analogy, yeah. So basically, again, if I were talking to you as an athlete, I'd say, listen, you know, your IT band, let's call it the lateral side of your hip, has a finite amount of load it can take, right? So let's imagine like a cup. it can only take so much of any fluid you put in it, right? Everything goes into it. So walking to school, walking to your job, riding the bike in the morning, going run, you know, a couple miles after work, all of that goes into how much, all that goes into the cup, right? And the cup only has a certain limit to it. And once the cup starts to overflow, that overflow is perceived generally as discomfort, pain, or threat into your body's kind of musculoskeletal system. And so, again, from an education standpoint, what I would let you know is there's two sides of that. One, if you're a pure runner, we know that glute strengthening and and management of your running gait is impactful in managing lateral hip pain. We know that. But also, if we just totally stop you from running, do a bunch of glute strengthening, and then shove you back out there and run, you're probably still not going to do well.
Right.
What we need to do is pull back a little bit where it doesn't bother you, right?
Right.
Strengthen you up, and then slowly reintegrate running back into that. And so, again, it's more of an education thing. It's empowering you, the athlete, or you, the patient, or you, the general public, into understanding why it is I have to slowly graduate my exposure. Why can't I just do more?
Right.
Because it seems like more would be better.
Right.
But that's not the case, right?
Yeah, you just answered, like, two of my questions. So other questions that I had, so thank you. Yeah.
So when you're talking about whether it's recurrent pain or slowly a chronic issue, there's a difference between walking and, you know, 10-mile bike rides.
Yep.
How do we, as athletes, how do we as coaches and trainers help manage that load? What are some suggestions that we can make sure that we're not overloading, right, underloading?
Yeah.
We're trying to find that sweet spot
yep.
that we're trying to get the best adaptations from.
Right, and so there's a lot of cool tools out there, Omega Wave and Catapult. These are Catapult is a GPS measuring system that basically measures an athlete on the field, their accelerations and decelerations on a, basically within a gameplay or within a practice setting if whenever they're wearing the device. Omega Wave is a heart rate monitor system that measures your heart rate or readiness, and so it takes into account how much rest or sleep you got. These are wildly expensive, and I don't know that they're as useful as just simply building trust and asking an athlete to rate their exposure, right? So rate the last couple days from 0 to 10. How tired have you been the last couple days? And the athlete says, well, it's been finals week, and I've been up every night. Oh, and it's like, you know, off-season training, so we're up at 5:30. I'm being a baseball player in my past life, right? We're up at 5:30 in the weight room, going straight to class, practice in the afternoons, and then, you know, studying somewhere in there, supposedly. So, right, if that's my week, then maybe heavy training days measured by, again, health questionnaires and RPE, which is rating of perceived exertion, right? So you can divide it up however you want, as long as the scale's the same. If you want to use the Borg scale or you want to use just 0 to 10, saying that, you know what, this practice was an 8 out of 10 for me. That gives you a good insight into, well, you've done this 2-mile run before, and it wasn't an 8 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it an 8 out of 10 right now?
Right.
Is it hotter? Is it because you haven't slept in the last 3 days and you're just beat up and worn down? And that may give you some insight into saying, like, maybe we need to pull the reins back because we're not helping.
Kind of like in the resistance training world, your one rep max Monday is going to be different than your one rep max Friday.
Exactly.
Right? There's, you know, and so the concept of the estimated daily max.
Yep.
Right? Go based off how you feel.
Sure.
Right? So the same application applies here, right? If you're running that 2 miles, and man, that's a 3 out of 10. I'm feeling great. But then you add in the stresses of work and life and,
yep.
and school and all that stuff, things change.
Things change dramatically, right. And that's what we don't do a good enough job of, because those things can add 5, you know, RPE points, which the difference between a 3 and an 8 is, I mean, staggering, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's crazy to think, like, wow, that's a way different experience for an athlete. And if we're not finding ways to measure and monitor that, you can easily overload somebody without even knowing it, because you are different than me, and even though we're both in the same strength and conditioning or running or endurance program, it doesn't mean that we're experiencing the same amount of stress, because, you know, I've got family problems that are, or I've got girlfriend problems, or I've got something that's causing these runs to be way, way harder than it is for you. And you're continuing to adapt at a good rate because, again, the porridge is just right, the Goldilocks analogy. You're living in the sweet spot, and I'm burning red, right? And that can't happen. And I think a lot of athletes end up in that red, and they don't even know how they got there. Like, I was fine a couple weeks ago, and, you know, added some, made some changes. And so we, in general public as well, to my analogy, talking about shoe wear, you may run a mile today and a mile tomorrow, but if it's 10 degrees hotter and you decide to try on your new fancy, you know, low mill, low profile drop shoes, and you come off with Achilles pain, you're like, it was only a mile. Yeah. Yeah, but the load on the Achilles went up tenfold because you took away 5 to 7 millimeters of heel lift. Right. So I think to your original question is it's about educating people. Mm-hmm. And if you can put it in ways that they, again, internalize that, it will change how they perceive their environment. Instead of just giving them an exercise, saying, like, do you understand why I'm putting you on crutches? It's not because you broke something, and it's not because that I'm telling you to stop. It's that you have a gymnastics meet this Friday, and you're unable to walk without pain. What's the fastest way to get back to neutral? Complete offloading, mm-hmm. right? And if I offload you 100%, then I know how much water is going into your cup. The answer is zero, right? And then I know that I can add it back in. I want you to do 10 calf raises on Tuesday. I want you to start doing some loaded calf raises on Wednesday. And that way I am in control of the pitcher pouring water in there. But when they're walking and, oh, well, I had to go run to my car, and then, oh, well, you know, this boy was chasing me around at recess, and now you've added a bunch of water that I can't account for. And you come in, you're like, you know, my foot was hurting at school today. So it was hurting when you showed up at school? Oh, no, 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 no. It was hurting by fourth period.
Yeah.
Okay, well, what was third period? Oh, third period was PE. Oh, did you go to PE? Well, yeah. I mean, I get a attendance grade, so I had to go run around a couple laps. I'm like, what? You know what I mean? So it's just, unless they understand, it's a moot point.
Yeah. Do you find it difficult, let's say, because I know with high school, there's some kids that may, like, if you were to give them a scale, like, oh, how hard was this workout? Right. It may be a little higher than, let's say, a college athlete. But, and that's just basically off their experience. Mm-hmm. But do you find any issues with that when, let's say, maybe someone at the college level, when you ask, when you're trying to, like, figure out what their loading is, and they're used to, like, oh, I'm tough, I can handle any kind right. of load. How do you handle that when you're trying to figure out resting, offloading, and your mm-hmm. progressions and deloading.
Yeah, and again, it's giving them the perception that this is for performance. Mm-hmm. So I'm not holding you back for no other reason than that you're peaking at the right time. Mm-hmm. I want you to peak for games. If you're tired going into a game because we had a hard workout the night before because you wanted to buff up, then your performance suffers, and that's not – the whole point of all this, right, is that you peak on the day that you want to peak. We want to be the best us that we can on the day that we run our 10K, we run our, you know, our marathon, the day that we, you know, run our sprints or ultra or it, that's the goal there. And so ultimately what I'm trying to get across is you can tell me whatever you want. It only impacts you because this is ultimately about your day-to-day operations and how your body is tolerating that. And so if you want to run it red, I mean, that's up to you. The risk of injury goes up, your performance risk goes down, yeah. right? Your rate of performance, I'm sorry, goes down. So it's only going to hurt you if you feel like lying about it. Now, the other point you bring up, which is a really good point, is about understanding what that is. And yeah. younger athletes, younger individuals may not truly understand, like, what is this pain? Is this hard? Mm-hmm. How hard is this? And so I think building that up, again, educating over time, like, this is, you know, I think we can take more liberties in younger athletes because they're a bit more adaptable, and I think the window is much larger, right? An 8-year-old is probably not going to get an overuse injury. It's very unlikely because the tissue spectrum and the variability there, you got a lot of missing area, right? So you can, you know, your spectrum and your margin for error is a little bit more acceptable, whereas I think over time where that's seeing chronic load, your margin of error gets smaller, so you need to be a bit more precise to what we were speaking to earlier about older athletes. I think your margin of error gets very small, mm-hmm. you know, and speaking from personal experience, you know, there are days where I'm like, man, I really wish I could go run today, mm-hmm. but I can kind of take some inventory myself and be like, it's probably not a good day to go for a run, right? I beat myself up yesterday. I'm a little sore. This needs to not be that day. Right. Could I get hurt? Maybe. Mm-hmm. I could not. it could be a great day, but that margin I don't think is acceptable. And so we just need to take advantage of that, I think, ultimately. Yeah.
Let's go to the other side of the fence. You have a chronic pain patient who every time they try to train, it always ends up in a bad position. They always end up hurting themselves, something different, right? It's not always the same thing. And so then they're under-preparing.
Yep.
What are some strategies for those types that they can build themselves up successfully and then manage that?
Yeah, these are the hard ones, to be honest. That stuff out there that I spoke about, the overtraining stuff, is a little bit easier, to be honest. I mean, I know it's a different paradigm. It's a lot more education. But this is speaking more to pain science and speaking more to understanding adaptability, right? You know, the old, you got to crack some eggs to make an omelet kind of thing. You don't have to crack all of them, right? But you got to crack some of them, right? And a little bit is okay. And it may not be comfortable, but that's your body saying like, whoa, that was unexpected. Okay, right? And as long as you're not sore for a week after, and as long as it's not shutting you down, the strategy that I employ is I want to make a different body region. Those are the athletes that I try to stick to different areas. I do a bit more isolated open chain stuff so that I can make one area sore and then leave that alone for a day and then do something else. They're like, well, I was a little sore over here, now I'm sore over here. It's kind of mix and match as opposed to somebody then doing maybe a bit more closed chain, full body, kind of broad brushstroke strengthening. And I find that to be a little more effective. But again, you've got to be there as their crutch at times and say like, no, this is good, right? You're a little sore. You know, your body is still trying to figure out soreness and pain. We didn't do enough to hurt any tissue. There's nothing that we didn't do anything that would have overloaded anything at this point. So what you're feeling is just adaptation. We need to let it recover and then load it up again. This is good stuff.
Yeah. Realize that you're still functional when you feel symptoms, right? Just because you feel something doesn't mean it's the end of the world. Doesn't mean that it's a negative, right? Like you just mentioned, you have to create enough stimulus for muscular adaptation.
That's right. And sometimes that stimulus, well, actually sometimes, all times that stimulus is above the threshold, but not so far that it causes severe tissue damage, right? And that's where the magic is, right? That's where you find out what the patient's threshold is. Let's say I can do 10 calf raises. Great. So 10% of that, right, based on Tim Gabbett's stuff, is adding one more calf raise, right? So I'm adding one calf raise every week or every couple of days until I look up and now I can do 50 calf raises and life is good, right? But if I tried to do 50 calf raises on day one, it's a disaster, right? It substantially overloads the tissue. You end up with kind of five-day soreness that nobody wants and or should want because it doesn't do anything.
And you lose function. And then
And
then your whole output of the day, your whole outlook of life for the next 4 or 5 days is
miserable.
Negative.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, why did I even do that?
Yep. Now I don't want to do calf raises anymore, right? And so it's always easiest to underload than just it's always more beneficial to underload than to overload, which is why most of my athletes, when they have chronic issues like this, my entire goal is to establish a baseline. And it should be something that's reasonable, right? So for the patient that I spoke to about my gymnast, I told her, I want you to walk for an entire day without pain at school. You're 14 years old with ankle pain. That is ridiculous, right? You should be able to walk around a day on your tiptoes without pain. All I'm asking is to walk around for a full day. And she's like, there's no way I can do that. Well, that's a problem right there.
Sure.
So our goal is to walk for a day.
Well, the fact that a 14-year-old already says they can't do something.
Right.
You're Superman.
Yeah.
Right? You are untouchable at that
That's
age.
Right.
So.
Not when you've had pain for 6.5 months.
Okay, so there's something negative connotations to activity.
Something as benign as an ankle sprain, right? I'm sure she was written off a bit, like, it's just an ankle sprain, you'll be fine. And 5 months later, it's like, well, it's not. And what are we doing about it?
So under-prescribing and over-prescribing, what's the best way? What are some strategies to monitor that workload?
Yeah, when the easiest, right, is RPE right after the exercise. How hard was that right when they get done and then the day after? Because I think, you know, day one, day two soreness is necessary to some degree because you know that you're overloading it to a point. However, if you've got 4 day soreness, then you've probably substantially overloaded it. If they come back and they're like, I feel good, I'm ready to roll, you probably underloaded it. The problem is everybody is different, and all the variables we spoke about, whether it be temp or nutrition or, supplementation or past injury history or past training capacity, all that's going to go. So if I have, you know, Joe Nobody walk in the room, I have no idea what your capacity is. Zero idea. Mm-hmm. You know, I could have you do a couple things, like do some body weight squats for me, and I look at you and I'm like, all right, that's pretty good. I still don't know what your 1RM is. I still don't really know how many times you could do, you know, 30% of your 1RM. So it doesn't benefit me to go to a very aggressive loaded exercise as much as I'm looking for finding a baseline there. And that could be something based on your experience looking at somebody. Like if, Ryan, if you walked in the room, looked like a fit guy, looked like you've been in a gym before, all right, so you may know your 1RMs. But let's say that you don't, and maybe I ask you to perform some exercises, or maybe I just give you a group of exercises, middle of the road, and then I assess you when you come back in. Dude, like, I wasn't even anything. I felt fine. I wasn't even sore. Perfect. It's always easier to add in than it is to take away. Great. So let's add another set. Let's add some load. Let's start building up. And then that one time where you come back like, dude, I was sore, but it was like good sore. You know, I was a day or two sore. It felt like muscular soreness, not joint soreness. My Achilles didn't hurt, you know. And then I say, perfect. We've got it.
The targeted areas felt the exercise, right? You should, if you're working out, right, you should feel it in the area that you're supposed to be feeling.
And again, how do they know? You've got to educate them. And that's, again, I just don't know that we do enough of that. There's a lot of dumb athletes, right? They show up, there's something written on a board, they do it, they don't ask any questions, they just want to get it over with. And that, again, is that the point? Like, you just run until you get sick? Of course not. It shouldn't be.
There's bonehead coaches, too.
Well, of course. Yeah, and again, so this is not just the athletes.
Right. Got to put a little bit on the coaches.
Because, yeah. Right, especially when, like we were talking about earlier, with younger individuals or team sport, really any sport athlete that has a prescribing entity above them, a coach or a strength and conditioning coach, a parent that's telling them, like, you know what, you know, I saw on TV over the weekend, I watched a documentary on, you know, on a pro athlete, and they run on Saturdays, and so that's what we're going to do. We're going to go run a 2-miler on Saturday because that's what they do. That's ridiculous. Yeah. And if the parent doesn't know any better, right, the athlete's like, yep, it's what we do.
It's the ninth grader that goes to bodybuilding.com.
Of course.
Looks up the workout that makes him the biggest and goes in there and ends up, you know, jacking himself up.
Right. Yeah. Because the workload that was prescribed was grossly higher than the capacity of
German volume training works.
Yeah, right.
So
right.
Please do this.
Yeah, of course.
That's what works. Okay. I'll
perfect.
Do it. Yeah.
Give me a squat rack. Yeah. I'll knock this thing out right now, and I won't walk for a week and a half.
Yep, and then you don't squat anymore.
And then you don't squat anymore, right? You got a bad taste in your mouth. Yep. Yeah. So.
So I need to talk about educating. It's all about educating the athletes, and we mentioned the coaches, and I think that's really important too, because I notice a lot playing sports that sometimes coaches, even though they're not out there, they don't physically understand the demands that a lot of athletes go through. So let's say there's some overtraining and it's already mid-season and you're already ramped up and you're playing games in the middle of season, and then eventually it's going to, you know, come to tournament time. Mm-hmm. So I guess my question for you is, how would you approach this appropriately, like, you know, education-wise during the middle of the season? And mm-hmm. since you're not in control of the schedule, like, how would you approach that delicately?
Yeah, so some of it, unfortunately, is self-selection. Right. This is self-selecting. Some of these players will get hurt and they'll pull out anyway. Right. And that's the unfortunate reality. Mm-hmm. To your question, you've got to build credibility, and that takes time. Mm-hmm. To your point, you know, the athletic trainer, you hope that there's a collegial, you know, atmosphere there that everybody has a say. That's not always the case. It's very rarely the case in some of that. But again, I think that having a voice, whether it be your athletic trainer, whether it be your strength and conditioning coach, whether it be a senior leader, stepping forward and saying, listen, coach, like, we're just worn out. It's been a long week or something. You have to let somebody know that. Sucking it up and continuing is the worst thing that you can do.
And always the mindset, too.
Of course, right? Like, be tougher and all that stuff. And, mm-hmm. and it's not that you're not tough. Again, I think versing it always into performance. That's what we're talking. We're not talking about being soft or getting out of running.
Right.
I'm just talking about, like, you've been on your feet all day. Y'all been running and practicing and all that stuff. And we can't do something else to tax you down, mm-hmm. right? Maybe y'all have been running sprints. You've been what sport?
Basketball,
right? So you ran a lot of Team O, Team D stuff, some drill work, and you get done. You've been pounding your legs out on the hard court, you know, and your coach is like, we need some more aerobic training. We need some more cardiovascular stimulus. Mm-hmm. Great, we're going to run. Is running really the thing that you need at this point?
Still.
It's the same stimulus, right?
Yeah.
Maybe you do bike intervals. Maybe you mm-hmm. do row intervals. Maybe you have everybody get in the pool and tread water. I mean, like, there are other things that are less unifocal that I think is the problem. But we stick to what we know.
Right.
We're on a basketball court. People run on basketball courts. Yes. So we are going to run. Right.
And the problem when you aren't experiencing symptoms is you don't feel like you need to rest.
Of course.
Right. And rest and recovery, right? A huge proponent, right? As a healthcare professional,
sure.
we want recovery. We understand that with adaptation, right, you have to allow that to happen. You can't continually break down.
Right.
Right. And when you don't, when you're either a younger athlete or you have a goal set in mind, you don't feel like that rest is going to get you to that next point.
Right.
Until it's too late.
Right.
And so, you know, as a healthcare professional, right, we have coaches, we have parents, we have athletes that we're in charge of that we're educating on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How do you get that message across? Where's the gold standard that says it's important? You know, that's
right.
The hard part, right, is that you don't have this one article or you don't have this this book that says this is why it's important.
No.
That's easily understood and passed on to in more of the layman's terms. So.
Well, we have this unfortunate retrospective you know, post hoc analysis of what is effective, right? Well, you know, Ryan, you're a pro sprinter and you drank a Diet Coke every day the last 30 years.
Yeah.
The Diet Coke is the reason you're fast, right? It's easy for me to say that because I go back, I find something that you did,
yeah.
and just because you're great, that's what you used. Or even worse, now you become the sprinter coach just because you were fast, and that's not the case at all. So it's a very dangerous landscape right now because we are mocking and modeling our most amateurs are modeling their training, modeling their planning and strategies based on a very small population of elite athletes.
Right. The elite that probably have the genetic,
of course,
makeup to
right.
get them there. Right, the road mm-hmm. to the elite is littered with injuries and
of course.
And moderate to good athletes.
Right. And that's what I try to tell them. Like, I understand that's how person X does it, but you're not person X. And at the end of the day, if you train yourself out of competition, then where are we? I mean, there are, you know, strange as it sounds, you go overseas, you know, international soccer, there are plenty of premiership soccer teams that don't do any strength and conditioning. And you ask the strength and conditioning coach, why do you not do any – don't you know the risk of injury that's associated with undertraining? Or he's like, yeah. And he's been quoted saying this. Of course I know it. But if I send them into strength and conditioning and they get hurt, then where am I? And so, it really, right, it's education. You really have to champion what you're doing and why you're doing it. And you cannot be you can't be confused and misguided by – that your training is the only thing that the athlete has to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it gets dangerous is you have to realize that if I hurt somebody in training, then what do I offer forward? Same thing in the athlete. If you get hurt in training, if your knees are killing you and you're going squat more and more because you got to get those gains and you got to get your squat up because coach cares whether you can hit or not, right? Coach cares that you can run,
right.
You know, the distance of the field. Coach ultimately cares that you can still play. He does not care how strong your hamstrings are. And so that's the paradigm, is where does that exist? And so pushing too hard oftentimes is dangerous because you incentivize people to come bigger, faster, stronger because their performance goes up. But ultimately you need to incentivize them to be the healthiest, most efficient, most effective person that they can be. And that is not the same thing as being the professional athlete that squats 400 pounds. You're not going to squat 400. I'm sorry. You're just not built for that.
Yeah. And if you are, it doesn't mean that it carries over to the field.
Of course not. There are plenty of unathletic-looking athletes
yeah.
that are very
yes.
successful yeah. at a high level.
And combine all-stars who do nothing on the field.
Do nothing on the field, but they can bench 225 5,000 times. right? I mean, again, so when I tell athletes, I'm like, listen, I want you to understand where I'm coming from. I am not here to tell you no. I am here to make you the best that you can be. And sometimes rest is the way to do that.
For an athlete, you can't do it all in the hour that you see, and there's 23 other hours that they have.
Yep.
What are your resources that you send them to get some information?
Yeah, so I'll print out, if you read through the PowerPoint that I have, there's some good resources in there, some infographics. So YLM Sports, YLM Science, it's a guy named Jan Lemur. I don't really know where this guy came from, but he has just absolutely exploded onto the scene over the last probably 6 months to a year. And he's got these little white small figure images, and he basically synthesizes current research and literature and puts together a very readable, very accessible infographic. And his stuff is absolutely fantastic.
You need to give Dr. Mansour a hard time. I spoke with him earlier today, and I asked him to give me a on-the-point infographic on athletic hip, and he's like, what's an infographic? I couldn't explain to him. I was like, I had to go back and say Cliff Notes.
Yeah.
Right? That's kind of what he understood, but I don't know if it's a generational thing. He's not that.
Oh, old. Of course. Yeah, right.
But I mean,
right.
Just like, I love this guy. He puts out all this information. Mm-hmm. So you're like, oh, that's a great article. How did I not come across it?
Is
he delving into something? Is it a certain branch? Is he hitting it up in different areas? But it puts out a lot of great information.
Yeah, well, I think the reason that I enjoy it is because it's very sports-minded.
Right.
All of his content is very much it's very much exercise-based, mm-hmm. not nearly as we'll call it orthopedic or manual-based, which, again, I function mostly in exercise and phys. So I love it. Mm-hmm. Everything from exercise or from hamstring EMG studies to some of the stuff that I presented up front about training volumes and training schedules and stratification, stuff like that. And so I think that type of stuff, I mean, there's a website called, I think it's called Stop Sports Injuries. It's a mother run, mom's sports. And there's actually a lot of good content on that as well.
Yeah.
Those are the type things that you need to be educated and at least get the parents on board. And whether that be having, quarterly, little topic sessions for the parents to talk about this, that, and the other. That's the kind of stuff that just needs to happen more. I think we've unfortunately got to a point in culture where information is too accessible and there's no regulation of that information. And so we have to be better about delivering information that is effective and appropriate, because right now you can look up anything you want and find anything to support
it. Find the answer that you're looking for.
Of course you can, right?
It doesn't have
self-fulfilling,
to be
sure.
Yeah. And that's the hard part.
Yeah.
You want to find out, this is my best way of doing said X, you can find it and you feel good about it.
Right. No, there's no doubt about it. So those are a couple of good resources. And then Tim Gabbett. I was kind of pulling the room in there about who's heard of Tim Gabbett. But talk about a good resource. I mean, he is the guy right now in load management and acute to what they call acute to chronic workload. How much is the workload right now, as in doing a bunch of sprints? Have you prepared for that? And if you haven't, then you can't be surprised if you get hurt doing it.
My 40-year-old right fielder in softball 2 weeks ago decided he wanted to pull his hamstring and then complained about it. And I said, well, what do you do for work for the last 20, 30 years? He says, I'm an operator. I sit on my butt all day, right? And so I said, that's basically what I said. It's like, what would you expect to happen?
Right.
You
want to know the number one time point at risk for most collegiate sports athletes? It's coming back from Christmas break.
I bet.
Right?
Everyone's off, yeah.
Two reasons. One, you go home, you do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Two, you come back and there's usually some kind of test run, right?
Oh, yeah.
You come back and there's some kind of milestone.
Yeah.
All right, come back from Christmas to see who was training. Let's go run 2 miles or 3 miles for time. You got guys, pulling over on the side, not even making it to the end, and everybody's hurt the next day. That's an acute workload that nobody was prepared for because we went home and we didn't do anything over Christmas, right?
I have one more question.
Sure.
Earlier you talked about there's a specific timeline of how long a structure can last before it just tires out and it gets hurt. From your personal experience and from your professional opinion, how would you approach that? Like, whether it's like marathon or Ironman, someone that wants to run that.
Right.
How would you approach that to increase that timeline of that structure or something lasting longer? Like, how would you approach that from a PT perspective?
Yeah.
Or, you know?
Well, I think there's probably three different avenues there. One is going to be the maximal output of the structure. So let's say the Achilles tissue, mm-hmm. right, connected to the calf. So a calf raise would be the most efficient way to load that.
Right.
So I would be curious, what's the maximal amount that the person could calf raise? And I would try to lift that number.
Okay.
I would also, and arbitrarily, you could pick anywhere from maybe 50 to 60, 65%, enough load, and see how many times they can do it, right? Because I'm also looking for a number that's equivalent to their body weight,
mm-hmm.
right, give or take, because that's the, even though it's not even equal to the amount of force that's put to their Achilles when they run. So imagine a plyometric, it could be upwards of 8 times their body weight when they land.
Right.
So what I want to do is ultimately start building that up. So I'm looking for muscular endurance under load as well.
Right.
So that would be things like resisted jump roping. Like, have you ever seen a shuttle
mm-hmm.
exercise, a piece of equipment where it's like a banded shuttle or a banded leg press
mm-hmm.
where you can jump into it
mm-hmm.
or like a Vertimax, or what's the other thing I'm thinking of where you have the belt around that's strapped to the, is that the Vertimax? Yeah. Okay. Things like that where I'm looking for resistance loaded jumps, lifting
mm-hmm.
that threshold. And then finally is using that mileage 10%, right?
Right.
So all three of those things need to happen. If you want to build the capacity of your Achilles, you need to build up the structure itself, and that could be with strength training. Most commonly is strength training.
Right.
Overload it, let it adapt. You need endurance because it's not, you're not asking, you're doing a sport that's asking for multiple repetitions, so you need something that is repeatable,
right?
Right? And so that is going to be less than their 1RM, but somewhere enough where they're going to get enough of a consistent load to get up, you know, 20s, 30s kind of rep range.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last thing, you need to make sure that they are gradually lifting up their training volume. And that could be mileage, it could be speed, it could be frequency, it could be terrain. And I would monitor all those things. So, I mean, it's quite simply, right? What do you imagine would be the least aggressive programming structure if you were a new runner? If I said, let's go run hill sprints, let's go run 100 repeats on the track, or let's go do some stride pacers on the track.
You're saying how much?
Like, what would be the most aggressive? What would be the least aggressive? So
for me personally?
No, well, yeah. Let's just say that
okay.
you've never run before,
okay.
and you said, I want to start running. I want to get to the point that I can run 2 mile. And so I say, all right, we're going to go run a mile today, around the city.
Mm-hmm.
Or we can go run 100 repeats. These are full intensity, high intensity, full speed, 100 meter repeats. Or we're going to do some striders where you're going to slowly build up, run for about 50 meters, and then slowly taper down. What's the most aggressive, you think?
Probably the sprints. I don't know. I'm a long distance person, so I would like to run the mile around.
Okay.
But
so the sprints.
Maybe the sprints.
Either one of those two would be difficult.
Okay.
Yeah. So what would be the least?
Probably the slow build up
right.
and the slow down.
Right. So most people would know. I mean, if you give them an exercise, they're going to put that in their brain. Like, that sounds easier.
Yeah.
And so it's picking things that usually don't involve a rapid change in speed or direction, that doesn't have a lot of undulation, as far as, like, I'm not going to go have somebody do hill sprints if they've never ran before.
That
right?
would suck, yeah.
Of course, right? That'd be terrible. Right? And I'm certainly, you've never run before, and we're going to go run 2 miles? Oh, God. This is going to go poorly. Right? Maybe we need to do some low-grade intervals. You kind of pace the straightaway, walk the curb,
mm-hmm.
things like that. And it's on a track, right? It's
right.
very predictable. We're not running up and down through kind of the neighborhood where there's changes in undulation throughout.
Mm-hmm.
This is very predictable.
Right.
And so, again, right, predictable, and then slowly graduate that along. And you got to be – it doesn't have to be fancy. Just change the things that you can control. We can't control the weather. You can control what time of day you go out there. You can definitely control the intensity and the surface that you're running on. If we're talking about running, for instance,
right.
you could say the same thing about swimming. You could say the same thing, right? How many meters, how much intensity, how much rest. Those are easy variables. Just pick something
mm-hmm.
And then keep it when that sweet spot that we were talking about earlier, right? How sore were you the next day? Chris, you killed me. All right. kind of noted in my head, next time we do this, I need to pull it back a hair so that we're still staying in kind of our sweet spot where we're not kind of overcooking this thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. That's awesome.
Cool.
Any other questions?
No, you answered all of them.
Awesome.
Chris, if somebody has more questions for you, how do they best get in contact with you?
Yeah, so there's a couple options. The best would be getting at me on my email. So CMJ, that's Christopher Michael Juno 027 at gmail.com. And you can shoot me an email. Just make sure I identify yourself so that doesn't get thrown into my spam or my junk folder. So just identify yourself if you have any questions, and then give me the best option to get back to you, and I'll try to do so as quick as I can. I'm usually pretty good with my emails. So that'd be the best route.
If they wanted to come see you, where are you located?
So I am at Shepherd, the corner of Shepherd and Westheimer. So that's 2085 Westheimer Boulevard at 77098. But again, it's the corner of Shepherd and Westheimer right there, middle of town, middle of the riffraff. And so if you need something, like I said, shoot me an email. We'll get in touch. But if you want to come on by, please do. I'm happy to have you.
Awesome. All right, Chris, thank you very much.
Thanks. Thank you.